Yeah, so my name is Leonard Paul, and I teach video game audio at the Vancouver Film School. And so I'm going to somewhat subvert the discussion towards my field of expertise. So it's going to be sort of feeding into that idea of the sort of big screen versus small screen, and more so talking about audio. So what I've done here is that I wanted to sort of show how a lot of the stuff with mobile, especially gaming and applications, are sort of, you know, they've kind of been investigated before with sort of older technologies as far as games. So what I did is that I've done presentations before, a little PowerPoint using a little Commodore 64 emulator. When I originally used it, I actually used the Commodore 64 at the Surrey Art Gallery. So this one, I just wanted to bring the emulator. It's not as cool because we don't get to hear all the noise and the grit, and it's, you know, just whatever. So the idea with this is that, you know, it's similarly a small screen real estate, and I wanted to be able to read it, so there we go. Small versus big. So I do have a bit of audio, so I'm not sure if it'll come up. So basically, I'm just going to talk a little bit about sort of small versus big audio. So I deal more so with sort of big audio. When I did programming for the PlayStation 2, we basically work with sort of surround sound and all that kind of business. And now, if you're working on PC games in the next sort of gen of you know, video games, we're going to be working in 7.1 and HDTV kind of sort of domain. So what I wanted to talk about is sort of like, I do have an interest in sort of retro gaming and retro sort of like chip tunes and stuff, basically audio that's produced on very small machines. So one of the pieces that I've done is actually produce a little piece that's even 128 bytes. So I'm really interested in that sort of challenge of trying to fit some sort of, you know, musical information into a very small space. So my background is both coding and music. So let's see here if I get any audio. I don't know. What's this one? There we go. Great. So I like this idea, you know, with mobile, that we're sort of growing from large to small. So the idea being is that, you know, we have these games, especially the idea of porting a lot of games from existing consoles. We're going from a large screen to a smaller screen. And even what we're talking about with the design aesthetic, where you've got the designer working on a massive, huge screen and then, you know, actually compressing it down and reducing that sort of aesthetic to a very small screen. So the same thing happens with audio. And the thing that I wanted to have, the little asterisks is up there, I wanted to have flowers in my presentation too, so there they are. So there was a little sort of challenge yesterday where I heard it's like, you know, with sort of the portables, like I've got Nintendo DS here, you know, the idea that this is not actually a mobile, but even just a couple days ago, sounds like Nintendo is actually releasing. So what they're going to do is they're going to put voice over IP, so there'll be a special sort of add-on to the DS that'll allow that. It already has sort of non-standard kind of Wi-Fi on it, so you can actually play games and share those with you know, people that are in your vicinity, so it's kind of interesting. The PlayStation 2, it has Wi-Fi on it as well. You're not really supposed to be able to get to the internet with it, but people hacked it within a week. And so that kind of communication is already possible. It has a microphone built in, so obviously you can do the same thing if you can crack the OS and get in there. So, you know, the idea of these small gaming platforms being sort of mobile app sort of platforms is definitely true. So I already said this one. It's interesting that with the Nintendo DS, what you can do out of the box, and they allow you to do this, is one person buys a game, and then you can sit around in a small circle or whatever, and everybody can actually, you know, use that same game. So they upload it to their system, and they're actually able to play that. So you can have one person that buys the game, and then people share, and that's legal. So, yeah, this is sort of this idea. So maybe it's a sort of sad sort of decay of, you know, us being more sort of artistic and want to do something new. But, yeah, it typically, you know, if there's money to be made, everything eventually sort of gets amalgamated into a certain degree. There's always the fringes, but definitely a lot of mobile games are, you know, they're ports. So this is an interesting thing that I've thought about before, where with mobiles and also with the handhelds, that we've basically got this sort of interesting sort of feedback loop, where we're looking at sort of almost regressive technologies. Like, you know, the mobiles are very similar to, say, you know, like if we're talking about like 70K for a game, or even a meg, you know, we're talking about sort of small, like the way that consoles used to be. Say Commodore 64, you got 64 megs of RAM. How do you fit a game on that, right? So it's kind of like, in a certain sense, some of these issues have already been looked at before. So obviously limited specs. So, yeah, similar to classic consoles. So if we're talking about the PC, obviously we have like surround sound. Like I said, PlayStation 2 has roughly 2 megs of audio. You get about a meg and a half once it's all said and done, which isn't a lot. You can imagine trying to fit a game like Grand Theft Auto, you know, onto a meg and a half. It's a very interesting, challenging process. So you use very sophisticated streaming methods of loading in the content and flushing content out all the time when you're working, especially with the PlayStation 2. The PSP is quite similar. A lot of complaints right now are that the loading times are quite slow. So the PSP relies on primarily, like, it's a UMD, so Universal Media Device, so it's actually a disc. So it's quite slow to load, whereas the DS, they opted for sort of cartridges, and so the loading is instantaneous. So those are some issues there. Then we've got, I guess there's even like a PlayStation 3 where, you know, they're starting to accelerate into, you know, highly parallel systems. So, yeah, there's this idea of, you know, for mobile games, you got about 70 kilobytes for a game. And in general, the way I usually sort of allocate for actually three things for audio is that I tend to say, okay, well, usually you get about a tenth or, you know, like 10% for audio for the CPU. Same thing as far as the memory footprint, and then same thing for budget. So it tends to be that way in video games anyways. So you get a very small amount of space. What are you going to do with your 7K of sound? So this is this idea. Mobile tech for audio is basically two steps behind the time. So first we've got the PC, which is sort of leading front edge. Then we've maybe you could consider sort of the, you know, the next gen or current gen consoles, and then sort of coming up third is mobile tech and also, you know, even handheld systems. So how do we deal with this sort of problem of trying to cram a lot of interesting information as far as audio onto a mobile system? Well, basically there's sort of, you know, you can break it down somewhat into two sort of methods of synthesis and sampling. So if we look at these, we've got the pros for synthesis is that it takes up a small amount of RAM and it's also dynamic. So in other words, it's easy to modulate your content in real time. So if we're talking about, say, a Commodore 64 or whatnot that relies on synthesis, then you can do all sorts of really neat stuff to change your audio in real time. It's not static, but unfortunately, it's also heavy on the CPU. That's the reason why even current-gen Xbox games do not use, in general, sort of custom DSP processing, so they don't tend to do anything in frequency space or FFT sort of dynamic changing, like changing formants or changing pitch without changing the tempo, things like that. They're simply not done because they consume too much of the CPU. And it's also more difficult to code as well. So with sampling, it's nice because it's easy to code. Basically, you just shove the data out the back and you're done with it. And it's high fidelity, you know, like whatever you put in one end, you get out the other. And with the current set of, you know, consoles especially, you basically get that. We're talking about mobile applications a lot of times for some downsampling to maybe 8K. In other words, you don't get any frequencies above about 3 kilohertz or so, which is barely a, sort of like we definitely hear that as being a very muddy type sound. So a lot of times you'll hear a lot of crunchiness coming out of. If you've heard someone playing a GBA, like a Game Boy Advance kind of game, it's very crunchy because of this downsampling. But you know, there's possibilities for it to be very hi-fi. So the problems with sampling, of course, is you know, if you want to get around it, you have to downsample. So you know, RAM gets consumed quickly, and it's also what I call brittle. In other words, you know, who was it? There was somebody that described sampling as a big dumb waveform. No, you can't do anything with it. It's just a chunk of a static performance. You know, like it's basically like, you know, like it's showing a picture. You know, like every time you hear this sound. And that was the thing that I found a little bit difficult with, the game yesterday, is that the sample is always played the same way. It doesn't need to be that way. You can actually cut up the sample into little bits and sequence the chunks. Depending on your API, you can do pitch adjustment and volume modification really easily and just do some sort of dynamic changes with that. But you have to sort of basically combine this idea of sampling and synthesis. So at that point, it's almost like you're starting to look at synthesis. Like if you start really looking into it, then you get into sort of granular synthesis and actually pulling apart the actual bits themselves. So challenges for mobile audio. We've got small speaker or speakers, sadly no surround sound. Or at least I haven't seen any mobile platforms that really have surround sound. The Nintendo DS does this very cute thing of sort of, if you heard a cue sound, it sort of does fake surround by sort of knowing that your ears are at a certain position when you're looking at the screen and sort of pushing out the frequencies that sort of do a little bit of binaural filtering with your ears, so it sort of pushes the stereo field out a bit. But I mean, that's basically all you can do. And of course you get no sub, so no bass. Noisy or adverse listening environments for mobile, even just the fact of being in groups, you can definitely miss a lot of content. So that's something that I've gone over a lot in my classes, the idea of dialogue. Basically, if you're talking about audio for games, dialogue is king, as it is in film. So you have to make sure that the dialogue gets through. If you're going to have a dialogue, basically sort of take the place of your text, what happens if people can't hear it? Subtitle it, what do you do? And then, yes, I heard somebody almost got hit by a bus. So using headphones can be dangerous. It puts you, there was a conference a while back where we were discussing sort of these different spaces. And Thomas, you brought up an interesting idea of overlapping realities, like what is real? Like you're looking at the cell phone, looking in and hearing into another world, but when those two worlds overlap, like what happens? Like, which one wins out? I think the battleship wins. So yes, using headphones can be dangerous, so you got to be careful. There's only so much you can do. I sort of suggested maybe one thing is to use an earbud on one side, sort of the DJ thing, be able to hear the environment on the other side. Maybe use, like even when people use open ear headphones, the problem is that they put them up really loud and it drowns out the ambient sound, which can be good because it puts you in another space. Audio, music, sound is immersive. It encapsulates what's behind you as well as what's in front of you. So unfortunately, if a bus is coming behind you, anyways. All right, so many mobile phone configurations. 5 minutes? Grand. Yeah. So how are you going to deal with platform sort of specifications and ride that? There's poor API support for audio. I haven't done a lot of work in it, but it seems that everybody's doing MIDI right now, which is interesting. I think Miller Puckett said we must undo the MIDI revolution. There's a reason for that, because it tends to be pretty static. You can use MIDI in a very good way, but it tends to be used quite poorly. Okay, so what are the options? So I was just thinking maybe what we could do is do some of the things I was already describing. Use some of the tricks that we used to use back in like the 80s and even 90s. So, consider every bit of space. Like every bit, like there's the piece when I did 128 bytes for a piece, it's like I actually did bit processing. So really just wring anything you can out of the system. Update with content from the server, that's kind of new. So maybe you can snag some stuff there, like sort of the Grand Theft Auto kind of thing, loading off the DVD and flushing content. Utilize synthesis. I haven't heard a lot of synthesis on cell phones, but I assume it's possible. Update content via Bluetooth if you're next to a computer or whatnot, why not? Or if you're next to someone else that has a cell phone, share stuff. I don't know, why not? Okay, and enjoy the lo-fi aesthetic, which I tend to do, like it and lump it. Okay, so I just wanted to say that in general, mobile audio sort of trails, PC audio, next-gen sort of game audio, so... this is the stuff I'm most interested in, is the combination of synthesis, samples, real-time effects and code, dynamic audio, compose in real-time using, I'm saying Max MSP, but it can be any system, So the audio is rendered in real time, like graphics. You know, it's not like you sort of flatten out your graphics, right? So this idea of using physical modeling or FFT effects in real time, it's a very sort of fresh topic in game audio. Composers need to rethink audio. How do you make your audio, how do you produce a score that is an instrument, in a sense, or is re-performed each time differently? Film composers are very happy with the fact that if they submit a surround sound score, it gets played back the same way every time. If you're going to start monkeying around with that, maybe as a composer we need to rethink how that process happens. So, you know, as far as working with audio for mobile phones, definitely keep this sort of, you know, these topics in mind. Okay, and what I'll do is I'll just quickly sort of show an example of sort of the way that I work with audio here. So I tend to use a program called Audio Mulch. It's a program that basically allows you to put VST plugins and all sorts of other things together. So I'll load up this one here. So actually, I should load up the other one instead. So I just wanted to show, basically, you've got this idea of, you know, like some sort of editing window, and then you've got your effects over here, and various parameters and whatnot, and at the bottom you've got sort of, you know, like the idea of the score that you can play through it. So this one here that I was working on is sort of, I was going to enter a competition for sort of this Commodore 64 remix type thing. So the Commodore 64 only has three voices. You know, it's got very constrained audio specifications. So what needs to happen is that you really need to rethink how you're going to do your audio. But I don't think that one will work, but I think this one will work. Okay, so what I'm sort of doing is kind of rendering my stuff and using a program that's easier for me to use, and then I can just repurpose this for, say, if I'm working on a mobile game. I know that when I was down at GDC, I visited a guy that, Ian Stalker, that does a lot of work with handheld games, and he's quite good at it, and he uses a similar method. So with this, I have my plugins here, but I also have a whole separate environment, so Fruity Loops Studio, which is running here in sync. So this one here, I basically did a remix of the theme song that I did for the corporation, but sort of did a chiptune remix. So I played this one when we did a little pitch at Virgin Records down in Vancouver, so it was kind of cute. And my buddy Michaela, she actually did the narration. I thought it'd be funny to have a synthesizer, because some people sort of refer to her delivery as very robotic. So anyways, sort of a second read there, I guess. But what I did is I basically pried apart the breaks, and they all are redone using elementary waveforms. So you can't really see it there, but those are little noise waveforms. So everything is resynthesized, so there's no samples used. All right? So there you go. Cute. All right, so anyways, I just wanted to show that there's a, you know, if we want to see what's going to happen in game, or sorry, like mobile game audio, then we just need to, I think, look at, you know, the way things are happening in games already and just really inform that. It's the same way that, you know, you can look at film or whatever and have it inform it. Game audio. It's not exactly the same thing, but it is quite similar. So there's a pre-existing history that we should really be looking at.